This is the Tuesday, June 6th, KALX Evening News. Here are tonight's top stories. Hispanic administrators at the university say it's time for action on minority issues.
Something needs to be done in order for these conditions not to continue.
The threat of nuclear accidents could be much worse than most people know.
Reports of strife in China extend even to assassination of the premier.
And in sports, the Giants and Reds are halfway through a doubleheader. Good evening, I'm Imran Ghori.
And I'm Peter Dudley. These stories and more next. A 26-year-old student, Jim Chuen Yin, stabbed in the back Saturday evening as he walked near Evans Hall at the University of California, Berkeley, according to university police. Police arrested a transient, David Folsom May, 35, on suspicion of attempted murder. Police said Yin, who was treated at Highland Hospital and released Sunday morning, said May allegedly ran up behind him and stabbed him once in the back. Passersby called the university police, who discovered May hiding in an ivy bed at the southwest corner of Barrows Hall. There was no explanation for the attack, and May was unknown to Yin. Taken into custody and booked for attempted murder.
The supervisors of Alameda County today overwhelmingly approved the immediate ban of the sales of assault rifles. If this sounds familiar, Governor Majin last week signed such a proposal into law statewide, but there's a loophole in that law that allows the purchase of assault rifles until January. Supervisor Don Parada says Alameda County can't afford to wait that long.
Between now and that time, it is still legal to purchase assault weapons in Alameda County. We believe that that creates a window of opportunity so that drug traffickers and gang members particularly could go in and stock up an arsenal of weapons, having no intention after the state law takes effect of ever seeking a permit to legally own those guns.
The vote was 5-0. The bill is identical to the one Duke Majin signed last week, except for the date of implementation.
Some University of California administrators and staff say the recruitment of Hispanics to the university system is moving too slowly. With more on that, here's KALX reporter Tony Denzer.
Well, Pete and Imran, the educational and civil rights leaders met in Sacramento today to release a letter to UC President David Gardner. The letter reportedly accuses Gardner of failing to take steps to turn around the representation of Hispanics at all levels. Spokesperson Rick Malaspina, though, says the university has been engaged in a positive dialogue with Hispanic representatives. And he says he doesn't understand the need for demonstrations.
The charges or complaints are not new to us. We've heard them before. As recently as 3 weeks ago, Dr. Gardner met with the consortium members in his offices. It was a constructive meeting, and there was no indication of any lack of confidence on the consortium's part. So this development today comes as a surprise.
The consortium that's been talking with Gardner is made up of faculty, staff, and administrators. One of them is Ed Adaka, the UC Director of Admissions. He says dialogue is good, but action is needed.
We're still a long ways from the goals that we, in a sense, have established. I think right now some of the biggest concerns that we have as a consortium is that we have very few Chicano Latinos in the administrative process, in the faculty, and right now, we don't see evidence of anything being in the pipeline that would lead us to believe that 4 or 5 years from now, things are going to change.
Hispanics account for only about 3% of top-level administrators in the UC system, while the state population is 24% Hispanic. But the university's Malaspina says change is underway.
And we would dispute there has been no progress. We've been making steady progress for several years, especially recently, in the hiring of minorities. Women at all levels in university, faculty and staff, and especially good progress in bringing in undergraduates, minorities who are underrepresented.
The UC says there is a commitment to recruiting more minorities, and Adaka says that the Hispanics want to work within the system. But today we're expressing pent-up frustration. Both groups say continuing dialogue is the key to making headway on this issue in the near future. Anthony Denzer, KALX News.
Thanks, Tony. Voters are going to the polls today in several Bay Area cities. The most contested issue is in Walnut Creek, where voters are deciding on Measure G, which would restrict commercial development. Pleasanton, on the other hand, is looking to expand its downtown area. Measure C in that city would provide $25 million for redevelopment and improvements. Polling is also taking place in Marin County, Fremont, Danville, and areas of Santa Clara County. Polls at all locations are open until 8 p.m.
Scholars will soon be able to read old copies of several of the Bay Area's major gay and lesbian publications thanks to an archiving project going on at the University of California in Berkeley. Pat Kreitz, head of UC's General Reference Services, says the new microfilm archives will cover a broad range of publications.
Doing is filming almost 36 serials, gay, lesbian. Some of them are artistic, some of them are social, some of them focus on religion, others focus on politics. But they really document a lot of the Bay Area history, as well as the history of these groups.
Kreitz said they expect to finish the project by next July, and it will be available to anyone, at cost. She also said a guide should be available by the end of next year, detailing the archive's contents and history. UC is doing the project, along with San Francisco Bay Area Gay and Lesbian Historical Society. Kreitz said anyone wishing to know more about the archives can call her at UC General Reference Services, or they can call the Gay and Lesbian Historical Society.
Voters in the Sacramento Municipal Utility District are deciding the fate of Rancho Seco. They could become the first electorate in the nation to permanently shut down an operating nuclear power plant. Election officials projected a heavy special election turnout of up to 50% of the nearly 530,000 registered voters. Voters in the district that includes most of Sacramento County and parts of Placer County gave the plant a reprieve in June 1988, but put it on probation until this election. Rancho Seco critics who want to close the 15-year-old facility are fearful that it is unsafe and are angry at rising utility bills. Supporters say the 913-megawatt plant's bad days are over now that it has been overhauled and has new management officials.
Well, while Rancho Seco seems to be on trial, today saw the release of part three of an expose detailing the world's nuclear arsenals at sea. Neptune 3, the newest Greenpeace-sponsored report on the Navy, details hundreds of naval accidents involving nuclear weapons and power plants. David Chatfield, Greenpeace Regional Director in San Francisco, said the report is not designed to hurt the Navy.
This catalog of accidents has never been put together before, and I think our major point is that we published the report to demonstrate the urgency of getting these nuclear weapons that are deployed at sea onto the nuclear arms control agenda and out of the navies.
He added the catalog of accidents has been put together to inform the public of the possible nuclear threat.
Accidents will happen, and that when they have the potential of involving nuclear weapons and nuclear reactors, that they are very dangerous and they pose an unacceptable risk to servicemen and to public health and safety and to our environment.
Chatfield said 20 accidents and five since 1980 have happened in the Bay Area. He also said 127 ships operate from the West Coast and 30% of the accidents happen while the ships are in port. After this, he gave a sobering thought.
The implications of that are that very easily we could have a nuclear accident and not be informed about the risks that we're taking. And imagine what would happen if a nuclear weapon were lost in the San Francisco Bay.
The Neptune series is published jointly by Greenpeace and the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C.
Some state legislators are siding with cities and towns against the state. Anita McKenzie has more from Sacramento.
Assemblyman Tom McClintock of Thousand Oaks was joined by tax crusader Paul Gann and others at a Capitol News conference to push a constitutional amendment to end the state practice of mandating programs at the local level and then not paying for them.
It's really a rather clever scam. The state caters to the demands of every special interest group that's seeking support for its own public program. It then requires the local entities to fund and operate those programs. And the best part from the perspective of the legislature is that the lawmakers can take credit for the program but don't have to pay for it.
Assemblyman McClintock says local entities have had to cut back on protective services and libraries in order to pay for mandated programs.
If the state legislature is committed to require a local government to provide a service, then the state should pay for that service. Otherwise, if the state doesn't fund its own program, the state should allow elected local officials to determine whether a program is affordable for its constituencies. ACA 1 accomplishes this task by requiring the state to fully fund a project before implementation. We assure that only those programs that are prudently reviewed are actually implemented according to the unique needs and circumstances of local communities.
ACA 1, which is supported by the County Supervisors Association, the League of California Cities, and a host of other local government entities, is scheduled for hearing in the Local Government Committee Wednesday. This is Anita McKenzie in Sacramento.
Now we have the weather with our favorite meteorologist, Mike Pickner. Are you there, Mike?
I certainly am, Pete, and good evening, Nimrod. Fog and low clouds over the bay right now, a typical summertime pattern. Gusty westerly winds if you're going out to the Berkeley Marina or out to the Emeryville mud flats to do a little running or jogging or windsurfing. Expect temperatures tonight in the upper 50s with the gusty westerly winds. Tomorrow morning, fog and low clouds clearing back across the bay over to San Francisco, mostly sunny. Highs will be in the 60s, maybe near 70 in some of these sheltered spots, maybe up around Centennial Drive up near the Lawrence Hall of Science. And over the hill, if you're coming from Moraga, places like that, they'll be in the upper 70s and lower 80s tomorrow. Fair weather through the weekend now, except for fog and low clouds nights and mornings. You don't need a meteorologist to tell you that type of forecast this time of year. That's evening weather. I'm meteorologist Mike Pickner for KALX.
Thanks, Mike. California's Assembly Republicans have seized upon the issue of how Proposition 98 money should be divided among school districts to block what had been harmonious negotiations over the state's budget. An unanticipated draft budget rejection late last night stalled what had been expected to be a quick vote to send the Assembly's $49.5 billion budget version to a two-house conference committee to seek a compromise.
California Assembly has approved a bill that would extend to all firearms the 15-day waiting period for purchasing handguns. Today's 43-21 vote on Assemblyman Lloyd Connolly's measure came after the Assembly rejected a GOP amendment to order the state to automate the check system within 18 months. Under current law, anyone buying a handgun has to wait 15 days while his or her background is checked before obtaining a weapon. A person with a criminal record who has been found by a court to be mentally incompetent cannot buy a handgun. Sacramento Democrats' bill would extend that 15-day waiting period to rifles and shotguns.
World health officials are discussing the future of AIDS at the 5th International Conference on AIDS happening now in Montreal. Dr. Jonathan Mann of the World Health Organization says as many as 15 million people may be infected with the HIV virus during the 1990s, unless international prevention efforts are improved or a vaccine or cure is found. One issue particularly difficult to overcome is that of mandatory disclosure of infection. U.S. Assistant Secretary of Health James Mason says the main thing is to get people in to test.
Would not link today mandatory reporting of infections and testing, because I think we ought to get on with making people feel comfortable about going to their doctor.
The conference is going on all week.
Coming up, Tom Foley takes over in the changing of the guard in the House of Representatives.
This is Metro Traffic's Joe McCall, and when I'm not looking at overturned big rigs, I'm listening to the most comprehensive local newscast on radio, KALX, 90.7 FM.
This is Channel 7 reporter Lisa Stark, and when I'm not on television, I'm listening to the East Bay's most comprehensive local newscast on KALX, 90.7 FM.
Washington Democrat Tom Foley has been sworn in as the 49th Speaker of the House and has promptly moved in to set the tone for his stewardship.
I am confident in the fundamental honesty and integrity of the members who serve here. I believe the standard of public conduct is higher and the performance of that standard is better in this House today than any other time in the history of our nation.
In a speech to the full House, Foley pledged to end months of political tumult that culminated last week in Jim Wright's resignation over charges of ethical misconduct. Wright presided for the final time as Speaker over Foley's election. Foley is a veteran of the House leadership with a reputation for negotiating tough deals through persistence and compromise. Republican Minority Leader Bob Michael, however, remains skeptical about everything being in order.
I'm all for putting an end to bitterness. I'm all in favor of putting our House in order. But we don't do so by sweeping things under the rug.
In a symbolic act, Michael was nominated as the Republicans' candidate for House Speaker.
U.S. officials are encouraging all Americans to leave Beijing because of the chaos there. The State Department says the government is arranging for added flights to help get Americans out of the country. Although there have been no known threats against American residents, tourists, or diplomats, Department spokeswoman Margaret Tutwiler issued the State Department statement. She has no firm evidence to confirm reports that Chinese soldiers loyal to rival political factions have clashed in Beijing, but she says there's reason to believe there's a split in the military. The U.S. isn't pulling any of its embassy personnel out of China.
Airlines jammed in the international departure area at Beijing Airport are jammed with the foreigners trying to get out of China. Many embassies have advised foreigners to leave because of the violence stemming from the government's crackdown on the democracy movement. William Horsley of the BBC reports from Peking.
It's not yet a full-scale panic, but one Western diplomat called it a stampede to get out of Peking. About 20 international scheduled flights took off, with virtually every seat taken. In addition, British Airways, Cathay Pacific, and Dragon Air, a Hong Kong charter firm, each organized one extra flight to Hong Kong. Two planes flew in from Tokyo to carry Japanese nationals there. And a series of other charter flights were being planned for later in the week. Even this was not enough. Crowds milled around at the airport, desperately hunting for tickets to take them to any overseas destination. And similar scenes are likely to recur in the days to come. After the series of denunciations in Western capitals of the actions of the Chinese government, and as genuine fears grow about the possibility of a large-scale clash between rival factions of the Chinese army for control of Peking. One traveler spoke of panic at a popular tourist hotel when guests were told that the bus service from there to the airport was being ended. Life in Peking is growing tougher for those who remain in the city. There are some shortages of basic supplies, and driving around Peking, especially after dark, is reckoned to be increasingly dangerous.
That was William Horsley of the BBC. Fears of civil war are continuing in Beijing. 4 days after troops began killing hundreds of pro-democracy demonstrators, soldiers are still shooting into crowds. And now witnesses say armies loyal to rival factions are trading fire. Citizens who fled from the 27th Army as it rolled to Tiananmen Square during the weekend today poured into the streets to welcome units from the Beijing-based 38th Army. The 38th Army is said to have opposed the martial law crackdown. A government spokesman appearing today on Chinese television says China is not afraid of the worldwide condemnation that erupted after troops crushed the movement for democracy. It was the first appearance of a top official since the crackdown began. Many governments are chartering planes to evacuate their citizens from Beijing.
But there's been no confirmation of a report that a young guard shot Chinese Premier Li Peng inside the Great Hall of the People on Sunday, slightly wounding him in the thigh. A Hong Kong newspaper says the guard was immediately killed. Li hasn't been seen in public since May 25th, five days after he declared martial law in Beijing. China's government has issued its first report on casualties from the 4 days of fighting in Beijing. It claims nearly 300 people have been killed and more than 7,000 have been injured. Unofficial estimates put the death toll at more than 500.
Afghanistan was the centerpiece of today's discussions between President Bush and Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. The two leaders met for an hour at the White House, where Bush promised to join Pakistan in finding a political solution to the bloody conflict. The two say they are on the same track in ending fighting in Afghanistan.
The President and I have reviewed the situation in the light of the prevailing circumstances, and we are in complete accord, both in terms of our analysis as well as the future policies that need to be evolved.
Prime Minister Bhutto and I discuss ways to encourage a political solution in Afghanistan that will lead to a non-aligned representative government willing to live in peace with its neighbors. The United States and Pakistan will continue to explore any serious avenue towards this end.
Pakistan and the U.S. have been aiding the Afghan rebel effort to topple the Soviet-backed Kabul government.
U.S. Marine air units have been ordered back into the classroom to try to prevent more fatal crashes. 45 Marines have died in 7 crashes this year. The commandant of the Corps, General Al Gray, says in a memo that crew error is suspected as the most likely cause in all of the accidents. He's ordered all units to take 2 days of refresher safety training.
A new airline industry study contradicts allegations made by some members of Congress that deregulation has led to less competition and higher fares. According to the Air Transport Association survey, average airline fares have decreased at most major hub airports, and competition has increased substantially since deregulation a decade ago. A Senate hearing on the concentration of airlines at major airports gets underway tomorrow.
A federal bankruptcy judge has told Eastern Airlines to go ahead with its plans to trim the size of the company. Judge Burton Lifland says he's issued the order because the company's striking unions have failed to come up with an acceptable plan for a buyout.
In an atmosphere of hysteria, Iran has buried the leader of its 10-year-old Islamic revolution. Thousands of soldiers and civilians pushed and shoved as Ayatollah Khomeini's body was lowered into the ground near Tehran. Alex Brody of the BBC reports from Tehran.
Crowds of the same magnitude as greeted the Ayatollah 10 years ago when he returned to Iran triumphant at the head of a revolution turned out today to bury him. Tehran was brought to a halt by vast columns of black-clad men and women. The crowd has been estimated at up to 2.5 million strong. So great was the crush and the frenzy of the mourners that the funeral itself was delayed. First, the lorry carrying the Ayatollah's body could not reach the crowds. A helicopter had to be brought in to airlift the open coffin to the Behesht-e Zahra cemetery. But there, hysterical crowds rushed the helicopter when it managed to land and dragged the body away from the custody of the Revolutionary Guard escort. For some minutes, the body was lost in the crowd. The white shroud was torn away, and the body appeared to fall to the ground. It was, however, retrieved and hurriedly flown away. Eventually, soldiers and Revolutionary Guards managed to establish some order at the graveyard. They cleared a space around the grave, a simple hole in the ground, so that several hours later, the helicopter could return with Ayatollah Khomeini's body, this time carried in a sealed metal container. But the crowd broke through the cordon, and again the body, though this time securely contained, was in the hands of those who were mourning him to distraction. However, the escort did manage to lift the remains of Ayatollah Khomeini from the case and finally lay him in the ground. Seldom can the world have seen such a display of mass grief. The outpouring of emotion by Ayatollah Khomeini's most loyal followers, the dispossessed, the poor, the peasantry, recalls similar chaos a decade ago at the same place, the Behesht-e Zahra Cemetery of Martyrs, the first place that Ayatollah Khomeini went after he returned from exile.
That was Alex Brody of the BBC from Tehran. Muslims in Lebanon joined in Iran's sorrow. Mourners brought Muslim West Beirut to a standstill as Shiite mosques blared verses from the Quran over loudspeakers. The action did nothing to stop Christian and Muslim forces from exchanging shellfire.
Poland's Independent Labor Federation, savoring its overwhelming victory in Sunday's parliamentary elections, is resisting pressure from the Communist Party to join a governing coalition. However, Solidarity spokesman says his organization will stand by its agreement to give the party a two-thirds majority in Parliament's lower house. High party and government officials, including the Prime Minister, have offered their resignations after being defeated in the election.
A Communist Party youth organization's newspaper reports more than 7,000 Soviet troops have been sent into the Central Asian Republic of Uzbekistan to quell ethnic rioting. It says dozens of people have been killed and nearly 200 injured in the latest violence between the region's Uzbek majority and the ethnic Turkish minority.
Denmark, a country noted for its liberal views on sex and the family, is the setting for the latest homily by Pope John Paul. Speaking at a mass in Copenhagen today, the Pope condemned abortion and divorce as ravages of sin. Denmark records one abortion for every 3.5 births of all marriages in the country end in divorce.
KLX News time is 5:54. Up next, the NBA Finals get underway tonight, and that in sports with Mike Curto.
Hello. This is Spalding Gray doing a pitch for KALX Radio in Berkeley. Just saying that you should really tune in for the news show. If you like a good combination of AP Wire and local news, you'll get it here on KALX in Berkeley.